Thank you. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
on Radio Network. listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
Listening to the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Sorry, just the way you did that.
Yeah.
I mean, did you hear about the conference they had the other day? Texas Betsy sent me a note about this. Pam Geller, who is one of those uber right wing, never saw a Muslim she didn't want to kill, pro Israel types. She's got some sort of sick, twisted radio show. So she has this conference at some Hyatt, and I don't remember what town it was in. Oh, no, she went to Michigan to have it. It was in Detroit. And it was going to be a conference about the rights of women in Islam. Why do I always go into that voice when I do? Yeah, because...
It's your preacher voice.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
yeah, you need a good preacher voice.
So it was going to be about the rights of women in Islam. So some Islamic women showed up to go to the conference... They were, of course, denied entry. And they asked the security guard, where's the Women in Islam conference? And the security guard says, the what? The Women in Islam conference. It's been advertised for weeks. The Women in Islam conference. Women's rights in Islam. Oh, you mean the anti-Islam conference? That's what they're calling it now. It's up there on the second floor, but you can't go, honey. Now, who knew that there was a redneck security guard in Detroit? I think it boils down to the fact that I don't do a good Michigan accent.
Oh, they're there?
But, yeah, but, no. Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean the anti-Islam conference? Second floor. Mm-hmm. You can't go.
Ugh. Ugh.
Because, you know, they went with their headgear on.
Of course. You know. And they kick, you know, Jesus.
Right, because to be fair, their God won't like them if they don't wear their headgear. I mean, all religion is nuts. I mean, we understand that, right?
Yeah.
But you know what? If you sleep better at night because of your headgear and you think God likes you a little better in this incredibly confusing universe, wear the headgear. It's fine by me. No problem.
Yeah.
Just don't ask me to wear it.
Mm-hmm.
Although if I came from a culture that had wandered in the desert for 10,000 years, I might have a rather cultural, emotional attachment to it, too, because that stuff comes in handy in blowing sand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why my culture wore kilts, because every now and then, as a guy, it's nice to get that cool breeze off the Hebrides up amongst the undercarriage. It's pleasant. And yet the wool is heavy enough to keep it from freezing.
I know. It's just they're oblivious to everything. They don't ever ask why this is this way. They just use it as a way to say, you're different than me. It's, you know, sneetches with stars on their bellies all over again.
And I guess they never... You know, I remember when I was in first grade, I think I had to wait 6 weeks before I got to check out the sneetches and other stories from the school library because everybody got it before me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to, and I sat there. There was a story in there called The Pale Green Pants, just about a pair of pale green pants that ran around by night. And I thought at the tender age of six that that was the funniest thing that I had ever, ever, ever read. And I went back and reread it when my children were little, and it's still funny, by the way, but it's part of the sneetches and other stories. And I was thrilled. You know, I was a pretty good reader by the age of six. And I'm sitting there reading it to Mom, reading it to Dad, and they were just laughing their heads off. And you know, the sneetches is a valuable tale to, and I guess maybe they just didn't, they never made it onto, the school was out by the time the sneetches got around to them. Is that it?
I sure hope not, because that's a fundamental law. It's like a law of human nature, and it's a, you know, it's like a parable of, you know, of, oh, yeah, we're not all that different, aren't we? You know, it's the proper way to look at your fellow human being. You know, you look at that story, and, you know, I tell my kids all the time, the best mistakes are, you know, other people's mistakes, or daddy's mistakes, or, you know, whatever. If I make a mistake, you better learn from it, because I'm paying for it. You better eat it. It's free. Eat it. It's another person's mistake. And listen to the story. What does the story tell you? And, you know, my kids get it. They understand. They asked me today, what's prejudice? Because we were talking about...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they said, what's prejudice? And I had to, you know, because now they're at that point now that they're, you know, they hear all these words that they hear all the time, and they're like, and I tell them, you know, like, you know, Daddy will talk to you like you're, you know, a big person. If you don't understand a word, you know...
You have to ask.
Ask, yeah. And that, you know, so they're like, what's prejudice? They don't know what prejudice is because they don't, we don't teach them prejudice.
Because I mean, they haven't been raised around any.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, I mean, I tell them it's there, and I tell them it exists, and, oh, why would anyone look like that?
And, you know, even when, it's even uncomfortable doing that, Brother Albert, because even when doing that, you feel like you are the serpent introducing the fruit into the garden.
Yes. Yeah, you feel like, you know, you got to be careful with how you don't want to spill this oil in the wrong way. You don't want to think, you know, you want them to know that this is not the right way. And they, you know, you have to say it very carefully, you know, on how you word it. I don't think it's all that difficult. I mean, why do you live with hate in your heart? That's living with fear in your heart. Why are you afraid? What are you afraid of? What is it that you're afraid of? And I constantly, anytime I confront, and I do constantly confront right-wingers, what are you afraid of? What is it that you live in fear? Do you like, are you happy living in fear? Are you really happy living in fear of everyone that's a different color than you? Of everyone that's maybe he likes you? You ever think that's a compliment? If some guy has the cojones to come up to you and say, hey, I think you're attractive. I don't care if you're gay, but I just think you're attractive and I just wanted you to know. Yeah, maybe you are. You know, he's fishing. Don't go, say, hey, well, thank you very much. I'm not gay, but I definitely appreciate that because, you know, women don't even tell you that. They don't ever say, oh, you know, they keep it all hush, 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 hush. And it's nice to be told, hey, you're good looking. Thank you. Take it as a compliment. They're not going to rape you. They're not going to jump on you. And come on. What do you think? I mean, goodness gracious. You should.
No, but the clamp down, tamp down, strap down, hung up. Yeah, they're kind of open. Maybe they will. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
You know, a little duct tape, a little tennis ball, a little, you know.
Dirty.
I mean, and the next thing you know, the youth minister is found in a bed in Montgomery wearing three rubber wetsuits with a pair of dildos in places that we won't discuss.
Oh, God. I mean, you know, it's just ridiculous. It's just utterly shameful. And they should be, yeah, you should be persecuted for being so goddamn hateful. Stop being so hateful. You think that, I mean, read your goddamn Bible for 10 minutes and then come back to us. You know, give me
Yeah, or don't. There's a lot of scary stuff in there.
Well, true. Have David Attenborough read it to you.
Maybe Matthew, Mark, and Luke and stop there. Because the next thing you know, you're getting into hallucinations about flying horses and apocalypses and blood, and their eyeballs rotted in their socket, and yay, their tongues became as big as mushmelons, and hallelujah, and the Lord was coming, and no.
Yeah, read the red words.
Read the red words.
Yeah, just read those. And not only that, you should maybe, you know, Nick, before you start going all crazy about Thomas Jefferson being an evangelical Christian, maybe you should, like, first recognize the fact that, you know, according to Revelations and blah, 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 at the very back end of the book there, the most recent edition, it's like he committed the most grievous sin of all, hasn't he? Because he went in there to write his own. This is what I think the Bible is. He wrote his own Bible. So what do you mean, evangelical? How can an evangelical? What are you talking about? He just committed, you know, according to the book. That's your book? Okay, well, this is his Bible. Why don't you read his Bible and see what his Bible says? You know, it's everything taken out of your Bible, but without all that other...
And see, there's all of that stuff out there, and dadgummit, you know, that's why, you know, the John Stewart letting him on the show was a little bit bothersome. Because he did not have time to peel this guy like the grape in the way, that he deserved. You see what I'm saying? He didn't have time to eviscerate him. He didn't have time to prove him to be a fraud. No, they just, you know, you got a new book out, so you get to go on John Stewart's show, and you get to babble your babble, and then, you know, John Stewart throws you a couple of softballs, and you tell a story about a 5-year-old kid who was 10 years old, who got lifted out of his chair for praying over his food, who was actually fighting. And, oh, okay, well, that's fine. Well, you know, best of luck. Go and sin no more.
No.
I mean, it's like going back to the tanning bed business. We just got an email in from Robert in Australia, Albert. And he said, as if we don't get enough sunlight in Australia, some people here still found the need to use tanning beds. Oh, you know, real Darwin Award winners.
What would Chopper Reed say about that? Anyway.
Not anymore, though, Robert says.
Yeah.
At least here in New South Wales, tanning beds will be completely banned by 2014. Why? Because they cause skin cancer, and we already have enough sufferers. It's expected that other states in Australia will follow. Well, let this story get a little bit of legs, and I really appreciate Robert sending it along, because this is, you know, this is a case of a government made up of its popularly elected people acting in its own societal best interests, in which there is a value in not having your citizens burn up of skin cancer. But let Brian Fisher of the American Family Association or Matt Barber or any of those other goobers, James, you see, Jesus gave us the freedom when he was God to have tanning beds and to make a choice for tanning beds. And Jesus wants us to have a choice, don't you know?
And
Rand and Ron Paul will be out there on the Hustle. Do you see what they've done in Australia? They've taken away their rights to tanning beds. Next thing you know, they'll be taking away their rights to have guns, and then the Austrian people won't be free no more. Because, you know, that's what, you know, that's really how I define freedom, Albert, is that, you know, the freedom to bake myself in a tanning bed and get really, really deep, level 5 melanoma.
Yeah, I judge my freedom by, you know, the unregulated markets. Yeah, unregulated markets make me feel free.
Yeah. You know what? I'm so glad that none of that awful communist Obamacare stuff has kicked in, Albert. Because I went to the doctor today and I found out how free I am. Man, am I free!
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Scott Brown's daughter's free?
No. She's a lot less free than I am. Because Scott Brown's daughter, you know, he hates that Obamacare, but if Scott Brown's daughter gets sick and goes to the hospital, she's really, really not free. She's dependent on the nanny state because she goes to the doctor and they don't send her a bill.
Oh, no. Persecution.
Yeah. She is a slave in a totalitarian regime. I, on the other hand, Brother Albert, I mean, free.
Oh,
yeah, right. Here's how free I am. So this was the follow-up from my little hospitalization scare of last week. And, you know, the nice thing is, you know, I don't have cancer. I don't have a rotten pancreas that's going to have to come out where I have to take insulin shots every day for the rest of my life and, you know, grow hair in strange places that have never grown hair before. God damn, I didn't even know there was a follicle on my toenail. You know, that kind of stuff. I got a rotten gallbladder. And I'm not trying to just talk about this, but this is how free I am. I got a rotten gallbladder, and I had a lovely conversation with the surgeon, whom I really respect, who was straight up with me. I said, you know, I'm a nervous wreck about this, Doc. He said, I've never had surgery. I'd be scared out of my wits at the thought of having done to me what I do to people. He said, so you're okay, which was nice. Maybe he was lying. But he sure came across as truthful, and it put me at ease. Okay? And we talked about realities and things that, yada, yada, yada. And so I was okay, you know, I'll get the surgery somewhere down the road. But this comes around to how free I am. I'm so free, I'm going to have to save up really big time until I can do it. Because I went into the emergency room on Sunday night, was transferred to a room in the wee hours of Monday morning, and was discharged at about 10:30 on Tuesday afternoon, okay? And I was free the whole time. You know how I know how free I was? Because I'm so free, I get to pay $8,130 for that.
For freedom!
Yeah, boy! And I'm also so free that if I want to have this rotten little Republican removed from my abdomen, that I get to pay another $5,000. So I am one free mofo, okay? I am free. I don't have none of that communist Obamacare weighing me down and keeping me up in the middle of the night, making me wonder about what would happen if I didn't have to pay $14,000 to get the Republican taken out of my my abdomen. I'm free. I am sleeping the sleep of the just.
Yeah.
I'm free.
Yep. That's right. You're as free as the people that get vaporized by our freedom bombs.
Yeah, I mean, consider the lilies. I am all kinds of free.
Mm-hmm. Oh, free. Don't you love freedom? Don't you love being an island unto yourself? You know? You don't.
Yeah, I ain't a part of no Maine. I am. I'm a rock. I'm an island. And a rock feels no pain, and an island never cries, right?
Yeah, you're going galt.
Yeah, if only I had some gold coins to trade for my cholecystectomy.
Ugh.
Maybe, you know, I don't know, you know, because if you read Atlas Shrugged, the way it's all supposed to work, Brother Albert, is that John Galt has some gold coins, but he wants some cabinets in his cabin somewhere in a remote holler in Colorado. So you make cabinets, so you go to John Galt's house, and you make John Galt some cabinets, and John Galt gives you one of his little John Galt gold coins. And then you go to the doctor and give him the gold coin to take out your rotten gallbladder. And I'm trying to figure out how this works. I mean, do I go to the hospital and offer to do progressive talk radio for them only for 3 hours? I mean, how's this work? We'll talk for surgery. I just... by God, I'm free.
It's a heartbreaking thing. I know you guys are kind of, you know, you're talking about online voting and kind of foo-fooing it. But wouldn't it be nice if, you know, you take your social security number, you have a bank, you know, and we as people get to set the goals of what we want our elected leaders to then do. And, you know, it would be interesting. I just want to see what it would be. You know, do your duty, go vote on this little poll that just kind of explains issues, has links, da-da-da-da-da, you know, take a little poll. Where do you want your money going? That would be nice. That's what I mean when I talk like that, is I want to have a little bit more say. Because I know where I would vote. I know I want universal health. I don't want Obamacare. I want universal health care. I don't want, you know, I don't want anybody to get any kind of fine, or I don't want you worrying about, I want you getting better. I don't want you worrying about money. I don't want you worrying about how free you are. I want to be free enough to say, the money that I pay in taxes, I want to go to this, not to this. You know, and I think that would set an agenda. I mean, shouldn't we be setting an agenda here? You know, I don't know. I mean, it's just like, you know, they get into Washington and they forget. You know, we don't.
Yeah,
have
just a bit of a caution, Albert. Mm-hmm. If you want to know how that will work out, have you ever? And I don't know if you do. I don't. Mm-hmm. But every now and then, I'll get up in the morning and I'll see an entire internet full of outrage over how some reality show ended and how the most worthy person got booted off in favor of somebody with two left feet. Okay?
Yeah.
Because of the will of the majority. If you want to know how, and I'm sorry, I'm being a nattering nabob of negativity, and I know it, but if you want to know how which you're describing would work out, is once you factor in Citizens United and everything, the wrong person would always be kept on the island. And the nice, useful person who's been great for the team would be sent out to swim with the sharks. That's that. Because you know, there's a reason that these right-wingers, for instance, are constantly saying, and this is their new tactic, Chris Krispy Kreme Christie in New Jersey is notorious for this. Well, I think homosexual rights should be put... Yeah, I think your homosexual rights need to be put on the ballot for everybody to vote for. Okay? And if you don't like it, F you. See, I didn't turn him into a redneck. Aren't you proud?
Yeah.
And because he knows that bigotry is the default position in this country. And it is the default position in this country because this country is controlled by people like Brian Fisher from the American Family Association and Matt Barber and James Dobson. All they've got to do is whip the faithful into a frenzy, and boom, everything goes sideways. You know, that lesson is still with me from Ken Burns' Prohibition documentary about, you know, you don't need a majority. You just need enough to make. All you need is enough of a percentage to sway the outcome.
True. But don't we have more people? I mean, when we have...
I don't know. I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that question, Albert. Sometimes I think so, sometimes I think not.
I know. I mean, I try to venture out my bubble as much as I can, and I try to go into neutral places, and I do discussions, and I often find the overwhelming responses from the most intelligent individuals, they're always liberals. I mean, we're like firemen out here. We're the ones that are sitting here, you know, anytime any of these anarcho-Randians are coming out, you know, look at Reddit. Yeah, they have these moments, but the people that go in there and shep and just eviscerate them. That's one of my favorite words. They eviscerate these people. It's like it's damage control. It's going in there and saying, no, you are completely incorrect, and this is why. Line by line by line by line. And yeah, I know there's an attention span. I know everyone's caring about Snooki and Snooki this and that. It's just because they like to hate. That's just because they like to, gossip and feel better about themselves because, what's her name? All the mother, whatever, the mother of the octuplets and this. And
oh, the Duggard woman?
Yeah,
the Octomom. I'm sorry, she's a different one.
Yeah. Well, and you can go to all kinds of, and I would even venture, a place like the Huffington Post. It's definitely got the left wing, dominant there. But, those right wingers come in, and my goodness gracious, it's like the liberals just eat them up like piranhas and eating up goldfish. They don't stand a chance. And if anything that you sit there and you look at their information or you look at the things they produce on the internet, they don't even know the internet. The internet, I think, is mostly liberal. It's a liberal place. It's a place where free ideas, just by its definition, it causes free thinking. Even if you're looking at reptilians and aliens and, this and this and that, it's just the fact that your brain's out there and doing the exercise. Like that lady, she pulls into the parking space, she just needed to practice, Brother Bob. That's what she needs in her life. The goddess of irony directed her to the, you are an idiot, you're gonna need some practice on how to do some thinking. And it's just, I'm going to take all exercise as good exercise. I mean, I'm going to sit here and take any kind of discussion as an opportunity to not only maybe change this person's mind, to not only give them a completely unmovable object of fact and reason, love and compassion. I mean, the things that I stand for are the things that they shall not pass. I mean, I'm not trying to be corny, but they shall not pass. I don't let it happen. And I'm not the only one. There's people out there just like that. You go look at it. It's all over the place. So, the internet is a kind of place where, apathy can grow, and you can waste your time, and you're doing porn, and da-da-da-da-da. But every now and then, the whole meat.
Now, wasting time and porn are not in the same category, Albert. I mean, let's be clear.
but at the same time, the whole idea of the internet, the whole fact, it's just there's more knowledge there than you could even shake a stick at. These people drowned. They drowned. They are not the majority.
And they're just sort of bobbing along all bloaty and drowny in the internet sea, is that it? I mean, and they just bump up against something every now and then and they holler, "States' rights! Protect the unborn!"
Yeah, there's an earthquake, it cracks open, one of them slithers out from the limestone that building on their head and the sediment. Oh, and they come out and, the fish eat it like they're coral. And they're just in a feeding frenzy of coral polyps. You know what I mean? I mean, they're out there. Sure, they're out there. But there's more of us. There's more of us in this nation. There's more of us on this planet. And it's time that we start standing up and kind of making avenues for us to let us know what, how things should go. Look at, online polls. Yeah, they could be fake. Sure, they could be fake. Yeah, that happens. But this stuff's getting bad. Hey, my PayPal account could get hacked. All these things can happen. But they can also be, minimized and mitigated. Voter fraud is another one. That's a that's like a boogeyman. It doesn't exist. I understand, how many people have gotten their accounts swiped? If you're silly with these things, I do my taxes online. I buy this online. I help you online. I do this online. I do everything online. The online is the next frontier in terms of, in terms of our civilization. It's going to be secure. It's pretty dang secure in a lot of ways, and I know it's also pretty vulnerable in a lot of ways. But, come on. I mean, I've never lost a single penny from anything, and maybe that's just because I'm lucky, maybe because I'm one of them coral polyps floating around, and it didn't get me. But it doesn't, come on, I mean, think of the damage it could do. It's like saying, the same thing when they talk about legalizing cannabis. Oh, what about all the people smoking pot and driving? Where are the accidents? Where are the cops crying about that they can't?
Well, yeah, that goes back to an old Robin Williams gag about getting pulled over, stoned, and hey, you're kind of driving a little slow there, Mr. Williams. What are you, on the way to the dentist?
Yeah, I am, and I got a bad eye ache, and I'm just trying to take it easy. All right, you have a good day. That's it. I got pink eye, I can't see. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like you're going to pass the sobriety test. You're not going to get into ag. It doesn't happen. All the studies, they show that these things, you know, so don't let these fears and, you know, irrational ways kind of hedge us and keep us in this pen. You know, it's time for us to open the pen. We can go back into the pen. We still have the pen. The pen, we're not selling the pen. But we're expanding it. We're going to, you know, we're going to drop our manure drippings and we're going to let grass grow. We're going to do, we have to. This is progress. I mean, how else are we going to get people's voices to be heard? A lot of people don't
know. How else are we going to build the bullet train that runs from Greenville, that runs from Columbia, South Carolina to Montgomery, Alabama?
Yeah. What, you know, I mean, that's the other thing. People don't know things. You know, like what percentage of the budget is NASA? Oh, it's a sixth of a penny. Do you think maybe we should give them a penny? Just a full penny? I'd give NASA a full penny. Look at what they're doing with a sixth of a penny. Give them six times more. Goodness gracious. We need to be out there. We do. That's the ocean. That's the next ocean. I'm trying not to say next frontier, but goddammit.
It's almost impossible, isn't it?
It is.
I want to give these, and I say this advice, under advisement, I want to give these heroic frontier pressing up from their own bootstraps, rising tide lifts all boat Republican right-wing types something to dream about and somewhere to go, preferably an all carbon dioxide atmosphere that they can then change to an oxygen atmosphere. You know?
Yeah, they're not going to do that without plants. Oh, no. They cut all the trees. And they're poisoning the algae. They're killing it. You know, and this is the thing that, I don't know, you know, I guess I look at life. We're in this for the long haul. You know, I don't want to leave my kids. You know, everyone knows this. You know, about everyone here. Nobody wants to leave their kids and their grandkids. They want their grandchildren and grandkids. You know, they want to talk about 2,000 years ago, how dumb we were. That's what I want. I want people to still be here and to say, man, they were stupid. Thank goodness they kind of started coming
around.
Yeah,
see, I'm engaged in a little bit of a vanity or a hubris. For some reason or other, Albert, back when I started taking this this pill for my elevated blood sugar, which is working very nicely, I might add, and is on the $5 formulary at most drugstores, so that makes me very happy.
Excellent.
I guess I'm less free because there's a $5 formulary, but I'll try to get over it. But I just, you know, because you're supposed to keep a record of what your blood sugar is day to day, to check it twice a day, yada, yada, yada. Well, I decided I would not only do that, but I would make it worthwhile, so I would keep those numbers in conjunction with just making a few remarks every day in a journal. And I got a couple of weeks into the journaling, and I thought, you know, who am I writing this for? And then I realized I knew all along. I'm not writing it for my kids to read later. I'm not even necessarily writing it for my grandkids, some born, some unborn, to read later. I love, you know, you're talking about all that wonderful stuff that's out there on the Internet. I simply adore to get on the Internet and read ancient stuff. Dr. John and I shared an exchange a few weeks back in which I recommended to him the poetry of Nezahualcoyotl, the philosopher king of Texcoco.
Just real quick, if I may, imagine trying to get your hands on that before the Internet.
Yeah, right. It ain't happening.
No.
But, you know, it's there. And, you know, Marcus Aurelius, and reading him and...
Mm-hmm.
And even though he was a conservative patrician, 1% preserving piece of shit, the letters between Cicero and Atticus, you know, those were preserved, and somehow or another they came down through the centuries to us. And I don't read them because I want to know what his politics were. I read them because they contain little nuggets of what his world was. And so I realized, not that I'm Cicero or Atticus or Nezahualcoyotl or Marcus Aurelius, you know, because my journaling is more like broke my effing finger today, you know, that kind of stuff. Won't go to doctor because we do not have health care. Because I'm free. But I'd like, you know, I'm just crazy enough to think that somehow or another, maybe somebody from it's very difficult to transmit knowledge from one generation to the next, especially when it's in hard copy. But I would love, I'm never going to be a mummy or anything, and I sure don't want anybody staring at me in a museum.
Mm-hmm. But Brother Bob, listen. This conversation will be heard in 10,000 years.
I hope so. I sincerely hope so.
Yeah, it's there forever.
It's there for as long as the server bill gets paid.
Well, true. But, we've got copies.
And I sit up nights worrying about these things. but that's why I did it, because it matters. We've got some ledgers from a store that a family member ran about 110 years ago. And they're just bare bones stuff. It's just like the old clay tablets from ancient Sumer. It's bag of rice, bag of beans, and how much things were back in the day.
You know, back in the day when we paid in a silver dime like Ron Paul wants us to.
and you see credit accounts and you see payments being made. The first time I saw those as a kid, I just sat there for hours reading every blessed line. And I still go back to them and I look at them because those are reflections of real, living human beings that sweated it out every blessed day and had a hell of a lot harder time than I do.
And you know what? They were more free, too, because they didn't have any of that damned health insurance to worry about. And if they got the cancer, they took the cancer, and they just went and died like Jesus wanted them to. Didn't run around trying to get cured.
Yeah, they followed the call.
So, I'm just a weirdo, Albert.
Yeah. Well,
but you know what?
Weirdos,
It beats the dickens out of being normal.
Exactly. Weirdos have a way of surviving. So.
And I get to console myself with that line from Forrest Gump. At least I ain't led no humdrum life. I mean, I'm not scaling the Himalayas in Nepal. I'm not sifting among the ruins of Ashurbanipal.
By
the way, do you know? And I have to share this with you because you're going to love it so much. Do you know the name of the language that Joseph Smith claimed he translated by looking through his hat with seeing stones at golden tablets? Do you know what the golden tablets were written in?
Oh, no, I don't know. I'm sitting down.
Yeah, strap in. The strap in advice is probably better for Dr. John, but yes, the golden plates were written in Reformed Egyptian.
I'm a believer. Oh, did they? Were they?
Yeah, they did, really, Reformed Egyptian. Even though there's no such language. And the plates that were written in Reformed Egyptian told the story about how Jesus came flying across the ocean after he'd done been murdered and stopped and paid a visit to the Nephites or the Lamanites or the Morons or whoever the hell it was.
Wasn't it Iroquois or the Aztecs or somebody?
Yeah, right. It's Reformed Egyptian.
Reformed Egyptian.
I guess that only came after unrepentant Egyptian.
King James edition. King James Egyptian. There we go.
I recommend Mark Twain on Mormons to anybody who wants to. I mean, Mark Twain despised a lot of people.
Yes.
But he saved the real brilliance of his pen for Mormons.
Yeah, he's the Matt Stone and Trey Parker.
Oh, they can't touch him.
No, I mean those are ours. They're the ones that are. Of course not. They speak crazy back then. You know how it is.
Yep.
Today we're that blend of hillbilly and ghetto slang and grunts and stuff now. You know what I mean?
Grunts. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I know. Albert, this has been a magnificent conversation. Thank you, brother.
Always, brother.
You all here. You make my evening. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
grunts and stuff. Hey, welcome to the program. Okie dokie. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you?
Hey, what's happening, Jim?
Well, first, a belated anniversary greeting to you and your spouse.
Well, thank you very kindly. We had a quiet but enjoyable day. I think we're really going to tear the roof off the sucker next year when it's 20. I looked at her across the luncheon table and said, you know, honey, we're old enough to vote and we're almost old enough to drink. God help us when we've been married 21 years.
Well, I certainly hope you get to enjoy that particular cake.
I do, too.
You know, you were referring to the Sumerians and Ashurbanipal and Sennacherib, and I don't know, it came to mind this excerpt from The Exorcist, which I thought was incredible. I've always thought it was incredible. When the archaeologist was thinking about Nineveh, and he wrote, or William Peter Blatty wrote, "And here once stood 100-gated Nineveh, feared nest of the Assyrian hordes, now sprawled in the red dust of its own predilection." And from that particular passage, I began to think about other things that will be sprawled in the red dust of their own predilection.
Well, that takes me immediately. Was it Shelley who wrote Ozymandias?
He was.
"Look upon me, ye mighty, and despair."
It was he, referring to the statues of Memnon.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But, you know, going back to the first part of your program, you know, history is written by the people who win it. History is written by the victors, not the vanquished. And, of course, as you well know, victory has 1,000 fathers. Defeat is an orphan.
Precisely.
So, you know, there it is, and there you have it. And as far as the particular gay thing is concerned, I would recommend highly to your audience that they see the film Latter Days.
Yeah, you sent an email about that, and I hadn't gotten around to it.
I mentioned it on this program before.
Yeah. Is that easily obtainable?
I don't know. I have a copy of it, but, I mean, you know, I saw it on Logo. And basically it's the story of a young Mormon missionary who is sent to Los Angeles with his co-Mormons, and he realizes his own sexuality, and, of course, he's sent back to his home in Pocatello, wherever that is, I guess.
Idaho.
Yeah, and so from that point forward, he's disowned and excommunicated from his
Shunned.
In church, and then he attempts to, because of the disgrace, he attempts suicide, and because of that, he is sent to a sexual aversion therapy center where they put him in tubs of ice and stuff like that and make him scrub floors with toothbrushes. And he finally, with scarred wrist, escapes back to a friend he had met in Los Angeles, and he is accepted among more tolerant people. I would just leave it at that. And, you know...
You know, there's got to be a special place in hell reserved for the people who torture a human being that way. Don't you think?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how it's structured. Dante gives us a good idea, but nonetheless, you know, going as far as the gay thing is concerned, you don't know what it's really like to be gay unless you are gay.
Precisely.
And, you know, you and Albert are among great minorities because you're both straight, white men.
Shining with privilege, absolutely, and I acknowledge that.
Yeah, you are, but you will never know what it's like to fight the prejudice and to have to deal with the situations that arise from day to day when people begin to wonder, well, why aren't you married or why don't you have children or this, that, and the other, and, you know, why do you do this and why do you do that?
And they concoct strange phrases like, well, he's a confirmed bachelor.
No, it's gone beyond that. That's the Southern thing, and basically even that's going away now. People are becoming more and more, well, I would think with the rise of people like Fred Phelps and The stuff you've been talking about with Romney and the Republicans, they're becoming extremely...
Well, they boasted about destroying a man's livelihood.
Excuse me?
There was that Brian Fisher creep boasting about destroying a man's livelihood. Now, these Republicans have been all about job creation, right? The job creators, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, this guy was a high-ranking member of the Romney team. He was being paid for his work, and they destroyed his ability to make a living.
Let me tell you something, Bob. I know exactly what it's like to be prosecuted and persecuted because PTA doesn't approve the way you do your thing, okay? Because I've seen it happen to a lot of people whose jobs were taken away, whose security clearances were revoked, and who were the subject of witch hunts. I don't know what it's like to have to avoid and to just wonder when you go to work every day if someone hasn't, you know, found out something or this, that, and the other. I know from personal experience. You understand me?
I do understand you.
And you'll never be able to understand unless you are gay.
No, and the thing is, what other people can do is to try to exhibit a little bit of common human, without regard to sexuality, common human compassion.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, if people were of a correct mindset, we wouldn't even have to use the word compassion. It would basically default to live and let live.
Yes. It's not that hard. Most of us most of our parents told us that an essential part of being a member of any civilized society is learning how to mind one's own business.
Well, I would think so. I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, minding my own business and taking care of my own affairs is a 24/7 operation, and I don't have time to worry about who sleeps with whom and who does what and what Snooki does or what some crazy idiot woman does in the tanning bed. You know, that's just the most ridiculous thing in the world I've ever seen. And by the way, when I saw her picture on Ibis this morning, I will guarantee you one thing, she certainly couldn't pass the paper bag test to get into the Harlem Club and to the Cotton Club in Harlem in the 30s. That's for damn sure.
No, and you know, that's another one of those anachronisms. You know, white people out there trying to be less white while celebrating their whiteness, of course.
Well, I don't understand it either because, I mean, of course, I had my days in the sun and had a tan and stuff like that because it makes you look more vibrant and healthy and this, that, and the other. But you get to the point where you get into a tanning booth and expose yourself to various classes of melanoma and all types of horrible things. And, you know, it's just nuts. I mean, I don't know if it's an urban legend or not, but I know of one woman who was or heard of and saw on TV, I mean, take what it's worth, who was going to be a bridesmaid in some type of wedding, and she went to 5 different tanning beds in one day attempting to get the right color. It killed her.
Yeah, look at John Boehner.
I mean, you know, it killed her. I mean, she literally, I think, died before the wedding was over. But, I mean, you know, it's just amazing the attentions that people are paying to certain problems, and I wish they would simply live and let live and let other people be themselves and, you know.
And see, it's maddening. It makes your mind feel like it's broken or something when you run across the Brian Fishers and the Matt Barbers and the James Dobsons of the world. And you understand, you know, it's not. Listen, if these people talk like this inside their churches or whatever, they have an absolute and incontrovertible, incontestable right to do so. But they have taken it to the point now where it is not enough for them to believe this way. It is not enough for them, Jim, to live in a world that is consumed by hatred. They wish to enforce that upon the rest of us and make their twisted vision of religion our national policy, and that's where people have to speak up.
Well, of course, but, you know, it's like it's been said before, you have the right to say what you want to say, and I have the right to shoot you for saying it.
Well, they certainly believe that.
Well, I definitely think that's the understatement of the
thing. That's the world they want to live in.
I mean, that's, you know,
I mean, that's stand your ground laws.
Well,
I don't know if you saw it earlier today, but in the Trayvon Martin case, I guess some digging around was done in Mr. Zimmerman's MySpace page. And he's got a lot of nasty things to say about people of different ethnicities. And in a very veiled way, his defense counsel put out a statement saying, you better stop that or we're going to slime Trayvon Martin up one wall and down the other.
Well, I've seen Zimmerman's photograph on TV, and I don't think he would pass Himmler's test to get into the SS, do you?
No. Well, his mother's Peruvian and his daddy's white folks.
Well, I don't think he's quite qualified. You?
No, but apparently he very much white. Yeah. He identified as white.
Well, still don't think he would make it into...
Oh, no. He can't pass the blonde-haired, blue-eyed test. No way.
And who is he to pass judgment on the ethnicity of anybody?
But who is he indeed? But the state of Florida said he had an absolute right to do so, and to do so with a handgun.
And did so. And the result is a dead 17-year-old teenager whose only crime was to be at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, his crime was thinking he was just free enough in Florida to go for a walk to get some Skittles and a can of iced tea.
Yeah, we've talked about all this before, and it's well known. But anyway, not to wax too much on people like Fred Zimmerman and people like that, but I just see a great divide in this country coming. And, you know, I just don't see the emergence of any... How can I say it? Of any degree of a great awakening of tolerance and understanding. I see it going the other way.
And you know, I think there's a natural progression,
you know,
in that, Jim. And
we're more polarized now than we have ever been in my lifetime. I mean, we are. We are more polarized than ever. And there is so much hatred. There is so much...
But that's not a reason not to go forward with further attempts at equality, further attempts to broaden the net of constitutional rights.
Well, in those attempts, I do, because I've seen so many... I've seen a lot of progress in my own lifetime, for example, with gay people, from Stonewall in 1969, coming through the sexual revolution of the 70s and 80s. And then I also saw the intolerance and lack of compassion for people with AIDS and things of that nature, and how it was...
And again, who were the principal purveyors of that intolerance and that hatred?
Oh, you had Jerry Falwell, and you had Pat Robertson, probably, and God only knows how many other of those people who are just, as far as I'm concerned, anathema. And for my church, they are excommunicate. And, you know...
And that would be the Church of Jim, right?
There was something funny about this, because I have friends who died with this.
Yeah.
My own life was changed by it. You know, on this program, I have never decried religion in any form, and you know that. You and I have had problems about that.
I understand that.
However, you know, I've had my share of time in the sun. I've had my share of good times, frantic tumbles, shy goodbyes, and relationships. And I've seen them go by the board. I've seen them lost. And I've not been able to express the way you could or Albert could about a loss in your situation.
No.
So I want people to be ever, ever mindful of that. I mean, it's one thing to be sympathetic. It's another thing to be a victim.
It absolutely is.
And I can tell you one thing right now. I serve my country.
Yes, you did.
And I've over my bed, I have a wall full of things that are signed from major generals on to senior civil servants to the Department of Defense Secretary. And I did so under a sword of Damocles. But it never prevented me from being ready on call in spite of that difficulty, knowing fully well that those people out there would devour me the way a lame fish would be swimming in a school of barracuda. You know, I call it loss of symmetry, because when fish swim in a school like that, particularly in barracuda, or even piranhas, loss of symmetry is the death knell. That's when the other fish will seek in and just devour you, and you're lost forever. So I've lived many lives in my life, Bob, many lifetimes in my life, and I appreciate the good words and the conversation about tolerance and openness and humanity. But you'll never know what it's like until you walk a mile in my shoes. And I want to underscore that.
And that, for all intents and purposes, is impossible.
It absolutely is. And, you know, for all your good intentions, and I appreciate the good intentions, as I said before, but you will never know what it's like. I mean, I want to ask you a question. What would you do if your own son came to tell you, Dad, I'm gay?
Tell him I love him.
Okay, that's good. A lot of people couldn't do that. But how would it make you feel?
It wouldn't change how I love him.
Well, it would certainly probably change how you feel about his prospects of being happy in life would be.
Okay, yeah. In that regard, I would be, there would be fear.
Absolutely.
Because I would know that this is a world made more brutal by the same type of people that we, you know, whose words we put forth on this program earlier this evening.
But unfortunately, my friend, you're in the minority. And the majority seems to have a way of, like stupidity, have a habit of getting its way.
And the majority only really gets the bit in its teeth when people are silent, Jim. When people, you know, it is an old saying, and perhaps some deem it trite, but I hold it true, that the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing.
Well, unfortunately, as history dictates, and as we read everything from Marcus Aurelius through the history of many governments that have taken power and, of course, found their way into the dustbin of history.
From Socrates to Julius Caesar to Jesus Christ to Gandhi to Dr. King. You know, when people say there's a better way, Jim, they are frequently condemned for it.
Yeah, they are. I mean, Christ was condemned for it, for what he taught, because what he taught was basically the way of the words in red, as was referenced earlier in this program, was to love your neighbor and to do what's right and to do the right thing, among other theological.
And you know, if you'll focus on that, it's amazing how many of the other perceived problems will sort themselves out.
Well.
But you see, from that story about the 5-year-old that was really a 10-year-old earlier, you know, the guy acknowledged to John Stewart that, yes, Christians feel persecuted in this country, but while they feel persecuted, there, and this is the hubristic, tragic irony of it, they're the ones doing the persecuting, you know. I don't know if you followed it or not, but there's been a great big nasty uproar for the last week about Dan Savage and some remarks to some high school journalists.
Yeah, I've seen Dan Savage. I've seen him on RuPaul's Drag thing.
Okay, so are you familiar with this latest kerfuffle?
No, but I know Dan Savage well.
Okay, so he's addressing these high school journalists, and he's talking about hate. And he says, you know, there's and he speaks, if you're familiar with his work, you know he speaks bluntly and often humorously. And Dan Savage said to this assembled group, there's a lot of BS in the Bible that we've gotten past. We got past, and he used the word bullshit. He said, we got past the bullshit in the Bible about slavery being okay. We got past the bullshit in the Bible about not eating shrimp. We got past the bullshit in the Bible about not wearing wool and cotton blended together. Well, we can also get past the bullshit in the Bible about homosexuality being evil. And at this point in time, a whole bunch of little fundy kids got up and walked out. And later on, he said, you can tell those little pansy asses out there that we're done talking about the Bible and they can come back in. And now, of course, Dan Savage is persecuting the Christians. Well, Dan Savage wouldn't have a damn word to say, Jim, if it weren't for the fact that the right wing is out there doing that and far worse every minute of every day. And so what he did is he pushed back a little bit, but they really are. They can dish it out. They're bullies. They can, you know, the best way to stop bullying, and I hate to say this as a person who espouses nonviolence, is to put one's face through the nose of the bully, and then the bully stops being a bully, and that's what Dan Savage did.
Right. You're telling me this? I know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, on this program, I have never, ever attempted to disclose anything about my life, period. You know that, and...
Well, come on, Jim. You've told some damn fine stories, okay? I mean, you have.
Well, of course, I guess I have. And, you know, I thought them humorous, and if I didn't think them humorous, I wouldn't have shared them with you.
And they were.
And, you know, I tried to, I guess, in the midst of a lot of conflict, maintain an element of symmetry, which is my sense of humor, and also my sense of history. And that's the reason I've constantly gone back on this program to things like the regimes of Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin.
Well, perspective, you know, you noted, you know, that America is more polarized now than it ever has been in all your life. And I don't differ with you.
Hear me out on this. We are almost at the stage right now of where Weimar Germany was in 1919. It's coming to that.
I do not disagree.
And what I fear the most, and the reason I've been called a Nazi because I talk about these things, is not because I'm a believer in what Adolf Hitler did. I mean, you know, I find him interesting. I find the period interesting. And I find it frightening, and I find it a lesson in history that we are not learning very well. I mean, you know, you have these people who stage these magnificent spectacles and this, that, and the other, and who posture and this, that, and the other, who fret and force their way about the stage. And they have a way of taking a decent and honorable piece of humanity, the way Germany and other nations have been taken, into the absolute depths of destruction. And I really see with the economic conditions and even the racial divide in this country, I don't think that there's a great deal more tolerance racially than there was back in the 60s. I think it's still very much alive, intolerance is.
I think the intolerance is very much alive, but by the same token, I think that it is becoming a more barbarous howl, because those are the... I prefer to be a little bit optimistic, sort of like Brother Albert on this. I think those howls are the last death squeals of a generation passing away.
I hope you're right. Like I told you before, Khrushchev once said, there are only certain mistakes that are corrected, and that's by the grave.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I've also stated this for the record, that I've also been a desolationist too.
And you know what? Sometimes it's hard to avoid that.
Well, you're 47.
Nine.
Well, 47, 48, 49. I mean, you know, hey, what's 2 years among people who've gone back, who go back as long as we do?
Yeah. Who's counting?
Right, who's counting? And, you know, it just seems like stupidity has a habit of getting its way. And that's just been the cyclical historical element.
But to a certain extent, Jim, I think we are our point of view is to a certain extent shaded by our place in both time and space. I read an article the other day that News Ninja Gene sent me. It was someone commenting about the way religion finds its way into our political debates. And it pointed out that in most of the rest of the so-called civilized world, the way that presidential campaigns and generally politics are conducted in this country might as well be coming from another planet.
Yeah, really. I mean, they're going to the point that, you know, it's not a matter of...
And so, it's our place. You know, we look down our noses at Iran and call it a theocracy. But, how much business do we have doing that when it is impossible? It would be physically impossible for a person to run for president and not periodically bow and scrape and bend a knee of fealty to some sort of divine.
Well, the thing about it is, Mr. Ahmadinejad has come out openly saying there wasn't such thing as the Holocaust, and it was all contrived and made up.
Yeah, he's a loon.
And, of course, that loon is the president of Iran, and that loon has the power of life and death over a very large nation among a very large number of people.
But a group of imams has the power of life and death over him. His powers are greatly diminished as a result of the last election.
Well, you know how it is among the clerics when they come into politics, how they will definitely defer to the secular in order not to be hauled out in the middle of the night at 4 o'clock. Into, well, I guess their version of the Lubyanka or the Lefortovo prisons of Moscow, Stalin's Russia. And that's precisely what Ahmadinejad represents to me. Now, it might not represent that to you, but that's what he represents to me.
It's actually upside down because the last elections in Iran were a great big affirmation of the clerics. They have the power now. Most any Iran expert would tell you, they have the power now to have Ahmadinejad dragged out in the middle of the night and taken out in the desert and dealt with. And he knows it.
Well, apparently he must have their acquiescence in what he's saying, or he wouldn't be saying it. That is in fact true. So I mean, you know, QED. But nonetheless. There it is, and there you have it. And
well, you did mention, Jim, and I just have to share this with you because it happens here in our home state. I guess it was last week that we had the story of John Racy saying that not being able to smoke in his buildings in Morgantown was just like having to wear a yellow Star of David sewn on his clothing. I don't know if you saw that or not, but yeah, he did.
Oh, we talked about that, and I told you the man was an absolute idiot.
Right. Well, yeah. He's doubled down. I've got the story here somewhere, but Fritz sent it to me. And you know, the mark of an enlightened person is that having made one mistake, you try not to repeat the same. Right.
Agreed.
Well. Fritz sent me this story, and at first, to be fair, I thought Fritz had sent me the same story we had the previous week. It wasn't the same story, Jim. He did it again. I tweeted it or whatever, and the fact of the matter is, Joe Manchin is never going to impress anybody with his big brain.
Agree.
And if he had an opponent with an IQ the temperature of water left outside on a winter's day, he would be dead in the water. But no, it turns out the story that Fritz sent me was not the same story you and I discussed. Apparently, John, and the sad thing is, and this goes back to what you said about stupid getting its way.
Yes.
Well, John Racy is trailing like 72 to 22% in polls against Joe Manchin. And there's a reason he's talking about all of this stuff. And it's because he hopes to bring out an electorate in this state that is unavoidably, undeniably racist and has more than a little stripe, a little pinstripe of fascism to it. He was talking at an event on this past Saturday about President Obama. And you know there's been a few things here and there about child labor bills where various and sundry right-wing legislatures in this country want to overturn the child labor bills.
I've heard about this, yes, about children working on farms and things like that.
Yeah, and he said, Barack wants to stop all children from working on the farm. Can you imagine this? I can't fathom that. Did you ever think we'd grow up in an America to see something like that? Let me take it one step further. He wants to disallow the 4-H from training children to work on a farm. Yavol.
That's what I'm saying. You know, politics in this country now used to be a reasonably, how can I say this delicately and with accuracy? Well, I will say this. It did not used to be the blood sport that it has become now. And when any type of contest becomes a blood sport, it's generally the bully who wins. And these people will do anything they possibly can, bring any particular issue to light and, you know, pervert it in their own way. I mean, John Racy compared his not being able to blaze up to being taken into Auschwitz-Birkenau. That's exactly what he did, which is absolutely fatuous and, you know, absolutely...
Well, it's hateful.
Well, it's not only hateful, it's just stupid. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You know, you have this country being occupied by stories like that, political stories like that, and the president being the man who can't do anything right, basically because in their heart of hearts, they don't like the guy because he's not white. And you have so many other prejudices that are being brought to play or into play that, well, in my humble opinion, and I hope I'm definitely wrong, and I hope you are right, but I have my reservations from what I've been through.
And I don't think you are wrong to have those reservations. But
no, because of living, Bob, I know what it's like.
But if you poll teenagers and 20-somethings, the results you get are wildly different on issues related to both homosexuality and race than they are if you poll the 60-somethings.
I do hope that there is a measurable outcome in a positive way. But it would appear to me as though a lot of these right-wing people, these fascists and people who do not have the best interest of humanity at heart, that they're trying to push back to the point that they can erase any measurable gains that have been made. They don't like those gains. They don't like the idea of...
No, they want to stand in the surf and tell the tide not to come in, Jim.
Yeah, they're standing their ground, and what they're trying to do is not only stand their ground, they're trying to take whatever ground that has been gained, whatever territories that had been conquered in the name of tolerance and willing to live and let live. That's what, in my opinion, they're trying to do. And they're very subtle in their ways that they do it, and some people aren't as subtle. But they have a lot of money and a lot of power behind them. And it's very frightening. And they have begun to really, in my opinion, erode whatever progress that may have been made in the past 40 years. And we talked about this before, too. Every element from racial toleration to entitlement program to health care to everything that's been achieved that's been good and shining. They are in their own way trying to take it back for themselves. And I don't know what they're going to do with it when they get it.
Well, then they will. I mean, if that ever came true, Jim, what you would then see would be religious wars in this country, a bloodletting, because then they would have to get down to the dirty business of fighting over whose version of salvation was the correct one. And you see, that's the reason that the people who prevailed upon the Constitutional Convention to agree to pass the Bill of Rights subject to the Constitution being ratified, that's part of the reason they did it, was because they, you know, there was a history that was not as far back as the Civil War is to us, of countries rending themselves in twain.
Oh, no. I mean, Bob, look at the French Revolution when it first started, and look at what happened to Robespierre. At first, he was against the death penalty. He was a proponent of the Declaration of the Rights of Man. And look what Robespierre became.
Yeah. I mean, these were largely English-based colonies, and they didn't have to look outside the shores of the Sceptred Isle to see what happens when you have internecine strife over whether or not transubstantiation obtains or consubstantiation. People were slaughtered in their thousands over that.
I know.
And so, consequently, they established a separation whereby the government would not be an endorser of religion. But, you know, this people like this this jackass on John Stewart's program, he wants an America in which government endorses religion, and then they get to fight it out over which religion gets endorsed.
Did they ever decide what the young man was praying for? Was he just saying his blessing, thanking God for his food?
He wasn't praying at all. He wasn't a 5-year-old.
What was he doing?
He was a 10-year-old who was engaged in fighting in the cafeteria.
Oh, I see.
The whole thing was made up.
Contrived.
It was a lie.
Oh, there it is. Well, you know how it is, and I'll get off here after repeating what I've said about Dr. Goebbels and the big lie. And, you know, that's the thing. You don't tell little lies. You tell those big ones.
Right, and this is, you know, this is a classic case in point of how right-wing lies get spread. It starts out before 2009 in a book by David Limbaugh. It gets picked up by Ann Coulter, and 3 years later, it's being repeated as gospel truth on The Daily Show to Jon Stewart.
Well, it doesn't bode well, does it?
It has to be fought back against. It has. There is a struggle, and there are no neutrals in this struggle. Jim, have a good evening, my friend.
Likewise.
Take care. Bye now. Our good friend Jim. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program. Okay. Are you there? Hello. Yeah, that was definitely the sound of the connection. Maybe somebody went for a sandwich. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi. It's Vince.
Oh, hey, Vince. How are you? I got a little echo coming back at me.
Yeah, it's my phone. It's I'm still working on it.
Okay, no worries.
Is it too bad?
No. We'll get by.
All right. So how you been, dude?
I've been well. How about you? Well, no, not really. I've got a little Republican living in my gut. But apart from that, I'm okay. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Can we just, like, get Godwin's law and apply it to, like, everything? It works well enough for internet discussions, but every time one of these idiots runs around and starts screaming about how, oh, my God, I can't smoke, it's like I'm being persecuted by Nazis, I just want to go, congratulations, you lost the argument automatically.
See, but yeah, that would mean having to explain Godwin's law to John Racy, and that's like explaining nuclear physics to
a 4-year-old?
To a Cro-Magnon 4-year-old. I will now get letters in defense of Cro-Magnon man.
And I'm sure you will. it was interesting a couple of weeks back. I just to kind of give you an update, I'm up near Detroit. Detroit, Michigan now, and guess who was right up the street from me not too long ago causing a ruckus again?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm next door to Dearborn.
Yeah, so that was it, the Burn the Koran guy?
Yeah, Kerry Jones, and according to him, I'm now living under Sharia law.
Well, that sucks. I mean, have you been able to get any? I mean, I assume you can still buy hot dogs that have pork in them, right, Vince? I mean, or maybe, I mean, maybe not.
I didn't know, but apparently I'm pressed and just didn't know it.
Dadgummit. Does that mean that, how's your lovely spouse feel about you taking on those extra wives?
Well, we hadn't gotten around to that yet, actually.
Yeah, you know what? I'd hold off on that conversation till the Sharia law gets a little more roots under it.
But in all seriousness, it's a city just like anything else. People just dress a little funnier. But come on, I work in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, what's funny?
I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot more elegance in a robe than in a pair of skanky sweatpants and a T-shirt that says "Fear This."
And never mind that those pants are down to their ankles, and you know they've got their boxers up to their arms.
No. I'm speaking in, well, I'm talking about what you see when you wander into the local Wally World around here.
Well, yeah,
like the Friends of Coal lady who got out of her poorly, poorly parked automobile. Yeah. It's not like they get dressed up to go to Walmart.
Dude, I don't know. I don't know if we're going to the website peopleofwalmart.com. There's some scary things there.
Oh, I go to peopleofwalmart.com about once a week.
I try to avoid it just because my wife used to work there and she was very much not amused.
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah, I can more than understand that. But you know, you're in Dearborn, so you know that's where Pam Geller had her Women of Islam conference that Women of Islam weren't allowed to attend. Yeah, piece of work, her.
They're all a piece of work. Gangrene finally hung up his campaign about 6 months too late.
Yeah, with a big thank you to Sheldon Adelson for, you know, for a casino mogul, that wasn't a good bet.
Nah. And it never looked like one. I who did he think he was kidding me? And did anybody really think he had a shot at this?
I don't know. Maybe he's paying off the Tiffany's bill or something.
I don't know. I just love though how it's okay for him to go however millions of dollars in debt he is right now, but oh my God, somebody doesn't pay their bills and, well, they ought to just go to a debtor prison or have their kids work the debt off being a janitor for a school or whatever the heck his bright idea.
Because that's the right wing definition of freedom, like Albert and I were talking about. I can go on having a god awful pain in my gut. Or I can find $15,000 laying around somewhere and make the pain go away. And that's freedom to make that choice.
Yeah, kind of like how, you know, I'm stuck in a dead-end job right now that, you know, if I'm lucky, I might be able to get promoted into something, but the reason I keep getting passed over is because I don't have a diploma that says I know what I know. Now, I could go ahead and I could drop, I don't know, what's the going rate for a year of tuition right now? About $24,000 if you go to a community college?
Ain't cheap to do that. Yeah, you're free enough to make that choice. But you're equally free enough to continue working the dead-end job and be glad you've got one, American citizen. Yeah, you know, the funny thing is it doesn't feel that free. It's kind of like an email I got from our buddy Robert in Australia. He said, after the Port Arthur massacre in 1996 with 35 people killed and 21 wounded in Tasmania, the federal government did what government should do and changed the gun ownership laws in Australia. And basically, you can't possess semi-automatic and pump-action shotguns, and they restricted the system of licensing and ownership, they came up with a whole process whereby guns were bought back and so forth. And with all of that having been done, Robert closes his email by saying, I still feel free. And a lot safer.
I would just be happy if we could, you know, join the rest of the civilized nation and, you know, not have to worry about, you know, your gut all of a sudden deciding to go AWOL on you or my knees blowing up on me or attack or God knows what else. I mean,
but see,
you know.
But see, that the heroes of the right wing are willing to sacrifice their own freedom. That's why that incredibly brave and heroic daughter of Scott Brown, who, as a result of the Affordable Care Act, is being allowed to stay on her daddy's insurance, well, she's sacrificing her freedom for us.
Yeah.
Because that's what the 1% does. They sacrifice their freedom. We just don't understand. We're a bunch of ingrates, us 99%er proles. Yeah.
Let's just call it for what it is. It's just modern-day serfdom. That's all it is.
Surf's up.
Yeah.
Well, it's awful good
okay,
to hear from you, Vince. Hopefully we will...
You got other blinkies?
Well, not other blinkies. I'm out of time.
Oh, you're completely out of time. My clocks must be behind. Well, I've got good internet now, and I've actually got myself into a place, so you'll be hearing from me more. Take it easy, man.
Well, I sure hope we will. Don't be such a stranger, Vince.
I try not to, but this is the first good internet I've had in close to 2 years. So.
Oh, I understand. Well, we actually think about you when folks disappear, so... You've stayed in our thoughts.
Well, I just wanted to check in and say I'm alive and well, and like I said, the Sharia law thing, apparently, I don't know what that's all about, but whatever.
Well, you know, you're there in the front line, so I'm sure you'll tell us the first time it gets tacked on your door or something. Take care, Vince.
Oh yeah. When the invasion starts, I'll let you all know.
Yeah, do please.
See you later, bud.
All right, later, Vince. Bye now.
Just another
free American. That's our buddy Vincent. Good to hear from him after a long time away. It's a couple of minutes before the hour. It's time to get out of here. And I thank you all. I thank you for the kind contributions that came in. We got within $10 of meeting tonight's fundraising goal, and that's pretty impressive. Thank you very, very much. And thanks to all of you who contribute your time, your energy, your thoughts, your emails, your phone calls, your participation in the chat room, thank you. Your finite time is the most precious thing that you can share. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo, is on assignment below the possum line and behind the cornbread curtain. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox for all that he does, every last thing, from the website to the technical advice, and occasionally getting behind the microphone and serving as a darn fine host in his own right. Thank you, John. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Everything you hear is a function of the ongoing hard work, 10 years now, that the White Rose Society, WhiteRoseSociety.org, has been making sure that progressive, liberal, sane radio is available on the Internet. There's a level of heroism there that most folks don't understand. Thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, stoptheache.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy. It's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.